ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brian behind the glass. It is a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's a getaway edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I'm sure the Rockets were ready to get away from that performance yesterday. Falling to Golden State, 133-110. Didn't really get the respect of their own head coach after the game. Ime Udoka was not too pleased with his team.
It looked like the moment was too big for a lot of players out there. So it looked like deer in headlights a little bit. Either look soft or scared. One or the other, and that's two bad things for a lot of our guys to have, and didn't rise up to the moment like I thought we would.
Soft, scared, deer in headlights. Do you think that Ime summed it up accurately?
Yep, sure do. Think that you and I talked about it yesterday, and based on the Golden State comments after the game too, you poked the sleeping bear, and a guy that wasn't even a part of playing started it, but then it continued, and it settled right where you didn't need it to settle with some guys that have been there, done that, and just did it to you again, and it was the perfect storm. It was, like you and I talk about, Jeremy, look, these moments, these games, whether they're playoffs and they're labeled playoffs or not, they're meaningful games late in the season that are going to teach guys how to play. Unfortunately, that was a teachable moment that was really painful to endure for the team, for the fan base, for everybody that hoped this was the next baby step of progressions towards seeing this team really grow up before our eyes. That was one where they just got kind of put in their place and sat down and told, not yet, little fella.
Yeah, I think sometimes you have to learn lessons along the way, though, even if it comes at, you know, in the hands of defeat. Like, there are two things that lead to change more than anything else. One of them's embarrassment, the other is desperation. Rockets were embarrassed yesterday, So let's see if they change. And it's not going to change this year. I mean, the Rockets are too far behind in the standings now. They have a tough schedule. Golden State schedule's a little easier. Four games back with six to play, and Golden State has the tiebreaker. I'm not a mathematician like Draymond Green, but I have the magic number at two games for Golden State. And with what's on the schedule for Golden State and what's on the schedule for the Houston Rockets, it's not in the cards. So this is the embarrassment. Embarrassment at losing to Golden State like you did yesterday, and hopefully it leads to change whenever they try to, you know, go through an offseason, go through the preseason, going into next season. They certainly got humbled. I'm with you on the chirping stuff, like Tari Eason, hey, you know, we're coming for you, Golden State. Like, you're not even playing basketball, man. Like, go play. Like, I'm not a words kind of guy. I work in talk radio, but I'm more of an action guy. Like, if you think you're on the level of Golden State, go win. Go beat them. Go snap this 13-game losing streak you have against Golden State. One game closer to getting into the play-in. I'm not a fan of the whole taunting on TikTok. Go win. Go win a
you
basketball game.
Saw what he did
game.
Last night, right?
I saw Draymond Green, like, look over the bench and said, I respect it. And I heard – I was listening to the game, not watching it. Uh-huh. So I know something happened, but I don't know exactly what it was.
He came out, sat on the bench with a Warriors come out to play t-shirt. Yeah. And Clay saw it, and then he told the team about it, and then they were all chirping at the bench about it. And it's like, okay, bro, like, this is taking it too far. You already got more play than you should have or probably needed or wanted to at that time. Granted, you were trying to have some fun. But now coming out on the bench, you're not going to play. You're wearing that t-shirt. They see it, and you're like, you don't think that's going to get them to take it up a notch? And they did.
Yeah, afterwards, Klay Thompson, I mean, they're all, like, saying it in the locker room and in the tunnel and stuff, like, Golden State, Warriors, blah, 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 blah. Klay said it's one thing when you're out there playing and you can back it up, but when you're trolling from the sideline, bro, what are you doing? I actually agree with Klay. I didn't like it this when Tari did it, and it's not hindsight 2020 based on the way the game went. We talked about this yesterday. Didn't necessarily like the move by Tari Eason. I'm fine with what Ime said. Like, I have no problem with a head coach being honest, transparent with the media. I saw a couple of people saying, well, is this okay with what Ime Udoka said? They're professionals making millions of dollars, and Ime's holding them accountable. Yes, absolutely, it's okay that Ime said they were deer in the headlights, soft, and scared. That's perfectly okay.
No, yeah, look, again, This is how you grow. This is how you learn. This is how you get better. And like you said, it's not going to be when you put a beating on a team that people didn't expect you to beat, or we see Jalen go for, you know, all these consecutive games of big numbers and doing more, or Amenton, all these different things. Part of it is, like, when you screw up, you're going to be sat down. When you get hammered, your coach ain't going to hold punches, and he's going to tell you exactly what he saw and exactly how far you got to go. And that's how you get better. And not that I wanted to be right about them possibly losing the rest of their games down the stretch, but it was a nice little run that they went on, and it was really a good, you know, shot in the arm for everyone that's you know, a Rockets fan or player, whatever. But reality just hit you really hard last night because you're done, and now it's how do you continue to grow even though you're not going to be able to do that in the playoffs?
All but done. They have they're not mathematically eliminated.
No, but everywhere else they are.
What do you mean?
They're done. I mean, yeah, look, I mean, there's always a chance, but they're done.
Yeah, I mean, they're four back with six to play. Warriors' magic number is two. I mean, the odds of the Rockets getting into the play-in spots, less than 1%. But it's greater than zero, mm-hmm. Greater than 0%. But they didn't play well yesterday. Golden State, I think, even tried to keep you in the game. Like, they're prone to turnovers. They had tons of turnovers yesterday. Problem was the Rockets just could not get a stop. Klay Thompson went nuts, had one of the better games he's had all season. Steph Curry went nuts. Both of them had 29 points. They couldn't stop anybody. Golden State nearly shot 60% from the floor. They nearly shot 50% from three. Like, you can't do that in a professional basketball game and win. You can't do that in any basketball game and win.
No, you can't. You're right. And that is a team that is getting their momentum and everything together. And whether they get through the play-in round or not, that's a team with their experience, with the ability they still have on the floor when healthy, and they were missing at least one guy last night in Kuminga. But the fact is that they've got enough veteran leadership. They've got some young talent that can play, and that's a team that's playing better with each passing game, where they're not just into sending messages right now. They're getting their bleep together, because when healthy, they're going to give a good game to just about anybody in the West except for maybe the top two or three teams.
Yeah. Poncho saying stick a fork in them, they're done. Yeah, I mean, you're just playing down the stretch now. You're hoping for a miracle. It would take an absolute miracle for the Houston Rockets to get into that play-in. You would need Golden State to fall apart. You're going to have to almost win out, because, I mean, the magic number's two. One of Golden State wins, one of your losses, there you go. It's over. Magic number's two. Draymond's math's not very good. I do think this year's been a good stepping stone for the Houston Rockets, though. 38 wins, and even though your chances of making the playoffs are less than 1%, you still have stuff to fight for. Like, you can fight for the 40 wins. You can fight for the biggest turnaround in the NBA. You can fight for an above 500 record. So there are still some things to play for. Now, it's all, like, moral victories. It's nothing actually, like, super tangible. But I do think that the Rockets, because they're a young team, because they're coached by Ime Udoka, I actually expect them to be professional and close out the stretch playing, you know, I'm not going to say they're going to win, but playing professional basketball.
Yeah.
I don't think that they tuck their tail between their legs and just mail it in.
No, I expect them to play competitive basketball, and they've come too far not to, because of the fact that at a certain point, moral victories aside, you want to continue to see your young players play better. Now Cam is back in the rotation, and Cam is putting up good numbers to where you're going to put him out there enough to make sure that you see everything you need to see from him. You're going to keep, you know, looking at the young core, and a Jock Landale who you can get out from under or you might want to keep around. He's going to get some minutes, yes, but the significant young players are still going to play their roles, and they're going to be a part of it. If he wants to rest the veterans a little bit more, you know what they're making, who they are, what they're made of, and they're not going anywhere. So that's another story, but I still think they're going to be competitive, and they're going to go out there trying to win games and impress people. But when you're 16 games over the 22 wins you put up a year ago, and then you've seen the development first of Alpi right out of the chute, and then Jalen later, but maybe better, the way we saw him, you know, head down the stretch to finish the season, and Amen Thompson in his rookie year, the continued progress of a Jabari. Look, there's been so many positives to where you can do nothing but say that is a successful first season for Udoka and for the franchise.
Yeah, I would wait until I'm mathematically eliminated before I sit the veterans, just because, you know, in respect to the game, you never know.
Sure.
Whatever happens. But I'm with you that not only – like, I would be even okay if, like, okay, Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks, you guys can go ahead and call it a year. Like, I would be okay with that.
Sure.
Limiting the minutes, absolutely on board with, but I would even go as far to say, hey, if you want to – Let's see what Min Thompson, assuming that he's healthy, and who knows if he's healthy because he limped out of the game yesterday. You go run some point guard for us. Let's see how this looks. Dylan Brooks, you're going to take a seat. Let's give some more run for Cam Whitmore. I think that would actually be smart because those young guys, I think, need some minutes. They can use those minutes more. Like, it would help their development. Whereas Fred VanVleet, Dylan Brooks, they've been in the league forever. They're pretty much at their ceiling. The younger players could use those minutes. Mm-hmm. I would be in favor of that idea by yours as well.
And you make a good point too. Like, until you're officially eliminated, then you owe it to the game, to the league, to everybody to let those guys play. The minute that you are eliminated for all intent and purposes and everything that goes with it, then there's no reason to play those guys anymore because they aren't as young as those and have the knees and the fresh legs of the young guys you're trying to see more of. And you know exactly what they bring to the table. And you know they're on your roster next year no matter what, unless you make some kind of trade. So you don't need to see more of them anyway. You're right. For the sake of you owe it to the game and the players and the league and everything else, you go out until you're done. And once you're done, those guys can sit.
713-780-ESPN. Rockets yesterday. How much of that bitter taste was in your mouth? 713-780-ESPN. 6171 says technically 5 back as Warriors have the tiebreaker. No, they're technically 4 back and the Warriors have the tiebreaker. So if they end tied, then the Warriors win the tiebreak. It's actually a half a game, not a full game. So it's not technically 5. It's technically 4. The Golden State Warriors are 42-34. The Rockets are 38-38. That's 4. That's 4 games back. Now, if they end up tied, Golden State has the tiebreaker. But if you go that whole fifth game, Rockets would be ahead of Golden State. The tiebreaker's worth half a game. I was a math major for 3 weeks, and then I dropped out.
You and Draymond.
6-9-4-1. But at least I know the magic number's 2. 6-9-4-1, Rockets are a long way from winning anything. Right now, a better draft choice is the smart play. Problem with that is you don't own your first-round pick if it lands outside of the top 4. And the odds of that are very low. In fact, I've given up looking at the odds of landing in the top 4. I want to say it's probably around 7%. Mm-hmm. Now, you do have Brooklyn's pick, so that's good. Hopefully you get really lucky. Now, you have chances here. Like, I just pulled it up. Houston, 7.1%. Brooklyn, 20.3% to land in the top 4. You combine it together, you got a 27.5%-ish chance to land in the top 4.
Is Brooklyn picks nice. Unprotected?
Yeah, it's unprotected. They have zero protection on it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you say there's a chance.
Yeah, they have a – so what did I say? The 27.5% chance to land in the top 4. So you got a better than a 0.25% chance to land in the top 4 when you combine both picks. Your chances of landing the number 1 overall pick, 6% whenever you combine the two picks. All right, 713-780-ESPN. How bitter was that taste the Rockets left in your mouth yesterday? 713-780-3776. Also, since the days of Hakeem Olajuwon, since he left the Houston Rockets – the Warriors are the greatest villain that the Rockets have. 713-780-3776. Busy show. It's a Friday. All your mean texts. We'll read those. Todd Kalas joins us at 4 o'clock. Looking forward to that. Who said it? What are your Houston Astro overreactions that you think are true so far through 7 games? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Joel's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
6171, taking a little offense to the numbers. Didn't realize you could win a half game, but good math, Mr. Math Major. I was for 3 weeks. You can't win by half a game, but the tiebreaker's also not going to win it for you unless you're tied. That's why it's not 5 games. If the Rockets improve 5 games over Golden State over the next 6, unlikely, Rockets win. So it's not 5 games. It's 4 games. Golden State has the tiebreaker. The tiebreaker's worth half a game in theory. So there you go, a little math lesson with the Bees. 713-780-ESPN, 4431. After that loss, the Rockets need to trade or waive Tari Eason. Blankers?
Oh, stop it. Would you please?
I wouldn't hate it if he was part of a huge deal.
If he's part of a huge deal, fine. We know that the Knicks were interested last year. There are teams that really like what he brings to the table. But let's not take a T-shirt and a tweet or an Instagram post or whatever it was, and go too far. The kid's got a ton of ability. He's been a really good pick for you since you made it. Yeah, it's unfortunate he's been hurt. When he's on the floor, he does so many things right that make him fit with this team, and he fits in the NBA. So let's not just jump off a ledge because the dude wore a Warriors t-shirt after saying Warriors come out to play.
That's a little bit of a stretch, jumping off a ledge versus waving or trading him. I'm with you. This is let's have a conversation in the office, and hopefully they did it before the game. Like the hindsight 2020 part's a part that I'm not cool with. Like Battery Chuck, well, if the Rockets would have won last night, everybody would have loved what Tari Eason did. Maybe some. We called it out for what it was yesterday before they ever tipped off. So I'm hoping that Ime Udoka had the conversation with him pregame. Now he wore the shirt, so probably did not. But that's a slap on the wrist. You're not trading or waving a guy because of that. That's pretty minor in the grand scheme of things. So I'm not trading or waving Tari Eason because he called out Golden State. I'm having a conversation with him. Hey, maybe we don't do that again. Now, if he's part of a blockbuster trade, if that's the route the Rockets go, okay. Like I could see him in a throw-in for a huge trade. I don't know who is going to be out there this summer. It's not my best idea. It's not the idea that I want. I want the core six to grow and develop together. I'm really not open to the idea of trading them. Now, if somebody that's amazing becomes available, okay, let's listen. Let's see if we can make some sort of splash. I'm not giving these guys away, but as part of a huge trade, I'd be okay-ish with it, depending on what the trade looks like.
You and I are both on the same page. This nucleus and this first six or so that they have, you can really build around if there's a way that, you know, you get creative or depending on how you structure deals that you can keep them all in house. But it also, you have the luxury if someone knocks your socks off or you find out, like when Daryl Morey found out Harden was going to be available when he didn't think that there was any chance he could find a guy that he could build a team around, that you have the draft capital and the assets and the young players that could make a deal like that possible for your squad, then you do it. And if there's a way that you can do it and you can hang on to Jalen and you can hang on to Alpi and you can hang on to Amen, then that makes it even better because now you don't take a step back in terms of totality of talent and you improve by having a go-to big-time guy that can lead your talent. So you have a ton of assets right now.
Yep, 713-780-ESPN, 1317, Texans letter jacket vibes, didn't cut or trade anyone for that. It's a good call. 2128, I trade any two players on the roster for Zion despite the injury and weight concerns.
No,
I
wouldn't not any two. Nope.
Yeah, I wouldn't trade Alpi and Jalen for Zion. Would you rather trade Jalen or Alpi in a package for Zion?
Well, you're getting a guy that's big, that can guard on the post, that can do a lot of the things that Alpi can do. I think that it's intriguing to think of he can still run too, so you can play your up-tempo more with a guy like Zion. I would probably lean a little bit more towards keeping Jalen and trading Alpi because you don't see that many significant big men except for Joel Embiid and the Joker type guys. Yet those two guys can play, and you know that Zion can play together with Jalen Green.
Yeah, I would. For me, it would be Alpi. He'd be the one in that trade because I like the defense whenever Alpi's not on the floor a little bit more. And I don't think you lose a ton offensively. All right, the Rockets, in my mind, are the greatest villain to the Houston Rockets since the days of Hakeem Olajuwon. Like, you could go way back, 80s. People forget the Rockets were in the Eastern Conference for a little bit. So Boston's had a handful of times where they eliminated you from the playoffs. They beat you in the finals twice. During the Rockets era, like Hakeem era, I mean, Golden Seattle was somebody who would have your number. Utah had your number as well. Lakers eliminated the Rockets a few times over a span of a couple of different eras. But in the post-Hakeem Olajuwon era, there is not a greater villain than the Golden State Warriors. A couple of reasons. The Warriors have beaten the Rockets present day 13 straight times. 13 straight times they've beaten the Rockets. They all but eliminated them from the playoffs this year. Steph Curry has already been the number one opponent, three-pointers in history against the Rockets. You know who moved up to two yesterday? Klay Thompson. Yep. Klay Thompson moved up to number two. And in this recent history where the Rockets have been in the playoffs, like the Rockets' all-time franchise history, they've made the playoffs 34 times. They've been eliminated 32 times because they won the title twice. So they didn't get eliminated those 2 years. Four of the last six times that you've been in the playoffs, you've been eliminated by the Golden State Warriors because they've had your number. A couple of times you felt like the Rockets were good enough to go to the NBA Finals, and if you get to the NBA Finals, you beat an Eastern Conference team in the Finals. So the Golden State Warriors easily the biggest villain of the post-Hakeem Olajuwon Rockets.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when you think about it, this is, but on the flip side, this is Astros-Yankees, only the Warriors are the Astros.
Yeah, that's what Ackerman said yesterday, too.
I didn't catch that part. I didn't hear Craig say that, but, I mean, it's legit. I mean, it's looking at this going, yeah, they're the one that constantly is that brick wall that keeps you from going where you've wanted to go. And then there's also a lot of the sidebars. And obviously this team doesn't know about it, but there's still people within the franchise that know it, remember it. And believe me, those three, that big three that Golden State has, they will never forget it. When they come to Houston, there are things that got under their skin, that ruffled their feathers from Harden and Chris Paul and all the back and forth during those competitive series, that it's a little extra special that they still want to stick it to Houston and the franchise, regardless who's wearing the uniform. And so it's definitely, if there wasn't, because the team was down for so many years, but if there's definitely one team that is, from your perspective, your biggest rival, it's the Rockets. For the Warriors, I'm sure there's plenty of other teams before they start thinking about the Rockets.
Yeah, that's punching down to Golden State. Mm-hmm. Golden State, I mean, they're also the dynasty of our generation. And I'm sure there are a lot of teams' biggest villain, not just the Houston Rockets, but last six times you've been in the playoffs, four of those times you've been eliminated by Golden State. They've ended your playoff season. I'm not even counting this year, whenever you weren't a playoff team, but they theoretically ended your season. So I mentioned the Rockets have been eliminated from the playoffs 32 times, been in the playoffs 34, eliminated 32 because they won two NBA titles. There's my math major again. Who do you think is the team that's eliminated them the most? Mm. There's five teams that have eliminated them four or more times.
Okay. Utah.
One of them's eliminated them six times, which is the most. Utah's tied for second with Seattle. They've eliminated Seattle and Utah have eliminated the Rockets from the playoffs five different times. They're tied for second.
Spurs.
Nope. Spurs have only done it one time. That was that Western Conference
semifinal.
Yeah,
that was the one where James disappeared.
Yep. Where he was on the bench in the fourth quarter and D'Antoni was kind of like, what was he doing? Twirling his clipboard, or not the whiteboard.
Yep.
Remember that?
When
he was kind of, they're down 30 going into the fourth quarter and he's twirling his whiteboard on the floor. I hated that.
So it could be East or West, right?
Yeah.
Lakers?
Lakers are it. Okay. Lakers have eliminated the Rockets more than any other team in NBA history. Lakers have done it six. Seattle, Utah, five times apiece. The leader in the Eastern Conference is four with Boston. Boston did it twice in the finals, and then they did it twice whenever the Rockets were still an Eastern Conference team. And then Golden State has four. No one else has more than three after that. So Lakers six, Seattle, Utah five, Boston, Golden State four apiece.
Yeah, you think about it, because some of those, when the Rockets were either turning the corner or when they still had Van Gundy, there were Lakers series where the Lakers in the opening round or something like that beat them too. But yeah, I could see that.
There was like back-to-back years where I think they were the 8 seed and they lost to the 1 seed. Mm-hmm. I think one of them was like both years might have been a Francis year, but I know at least one was a Francis year. Then you had like the Bokey knock bar. I always pull back to that Bokey whenever he yanked down Karl Malone and like tore his jersey. And everybody, Bokey knock bar became a like cult hero in Houston after he did that. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I've noticed a tell with Nick Caserio. When he wants a player, he's going to get a player. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word for Allstate Siding and Windows. Remember last year's record-breaking heat? Don't wait until summer. Make your home more energy efficient right now by calling Allstate Windows and Siding. Built for Texas, their wind-tested hurricane-strength windows and siding are Texas tough to sustain the weather elements, the heat, the rain, the wind, and the hail, while reducing outdoor noise and enhancing the appearance of your home. I just had them put in my house. I'm telling you, the curb appeal was graded way up once those windows were put in. Then when I know that I could save up to 40% on my energy bills, and the fact that they're going to keep the heat out in the summer and keep the heat in the winter, It's phenomenal. Right now, 30% off all windows, $2,500 off a complete siding job as well. But they do free estimates. All you got to do is call them. They can come to your house, and they can tell you exactly what they could do for you, windows and siding-wise. Your house is your biggest investment. Why not protect it like a very solid outer shell from hurricane season, the heat, and the cold by calling Allstate Windows and Siding? Call them right now, 832-204-1936. 832-204-1936. They'll come to your house. They'll tell you what they can do. They'll tell you exactly how you can work with them in terms of financing and other things. They have discounts available for first responders, military, and senior citizens. But you can check out their website, allstatewindowsandsiding.com. They are the best in the business. Mary and her crew, they're family-owned and operated for almost 50 years. They're going to take care of you, too.
ESPN 97.5. You found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On Monday, the Killer G's, Gallant and George, and the Killer Bees, Branham and Blank, will be broadcasting live from Space Cadet Bar. Join us and the boys from the Killer G's, and then watch the National Championship Game and Astros Rangers on Monday. They will have a special burger beer combo deal, bucket specials, victory beers for the Astros game, too. That's awesome. What's a victory bill? A victory beer? If you arrive by the third inning and the Astros win, you will get a free victory beer. So make sure you get to the Space Cadet on Monday to hang out with us and stay for the Astros and then National Championship Monday as well. Space Cadet Monday, Killer G's, Killer Bees will be there for you. I've noticed something about Nick Caserio. One Nicholas Caserio, who the approval rating on Nicholas Caserio over his tenure with the Houston Texans has been a roller coaster, to say the least. You go back, I'm not going to say a year ago, because people were pretty happy. Well, it was before the draft. Yeah, a year ago. We'll go back a year ago. A lot of people wanted Caserio fired. Like, he had the press conference after they hired DeMeco, where he was basically saying there's not one man that's bigger than the organization. And people took that and ran with it like he was going to get fired after the draft. People sensationalizing that and fear-mongering that. But there is a tell for Nick Caserio. We know that Nick Caserio is very, very aggressive. He likes to trade, whether it's trading up in the draft, whether it's trading down in the draft, whether it's trading for players and then cutting those players a week later, never before training camp. But he's also not afraid of the splash moves. And the splash moves were, you know, according to the numbers, he's giving up too much value. You go back to Will Anderson last year. You know, the picks that they gave up to trade up for number three, the draft value chart showed that that was incredibly egregious. But you have to compliment Nick Caserio for hitting on Will Anderson, to trust the scout, to evaluate the player and know that's who you want, and then go out and get them, even if you overspend. But if you overspend, the player better be good, and Will Anderson was good. So here's the tell on Nick Caserio. He has no issues overpaying if he likes the player. And I'm talking with draft capital, not necessarily money, because there has been times when he's pinched pennies and hasn't gotten the player. I think that was an example whenever Sheldon Rankin signed somewhere else for $1 million more. But look at all the times when the Nick Caserio has made a trade for a player that he's wanted. You can go back to his first draft when he traded up for Nico Collins. He traded up for Garrett Wallow, for goodness sakes. The Will Anderson trade last year, again, wanted the player, traded a lot, even if it was a lot, and he was going to be criticized to go get the player. And then the most recent example was Stephon Diggs. I don't know how much of the Minnesota trade was kind of thought, you know, we can use that additional second on Stephon Diggs. Maybe he knew, maybe he didn't. Reading some of the Buffalo side of the story, it seemed like it all came together this week. So maybe he knew the price tag but hadn't officially made the offer, et cetera, et cetera. But he goes out and he gets Stephon Diggs, and people were criticizing Caserio because he gave up that 25 second-round pick of Minnesota that can be somewhere between the 32nd and 40th pick of the draft next year. But Nick Caserio wanted Stephon Diggs. He didn't care about the price as much. He's going to be in the ballpark, but he doesn't care about overspending. He didn't care about making it basically a one-year deal and he could be a free agent after 2024. All Nick Caserio cares about is getting players that he wants. And we've seen it time and time again with Nick Caserio.
Yeah, and the thing is that as long as there's, like, he has his own parameters too, like at a certain point, he should be part of the reason why you're in the job that you're in is because you have a skill to be able to do the things a general manager does, from talent evaluation to the cap to all the different things that you're dealing with. And I think that in watching a guy like Daryl Morey, Daryl Morey used to also do what Nick Caserio does. But Daryl Morey didn't have any filters or parameters. So Daryl Morey wanted Carmelo Anthony when Carmelo Anthony was really, really good. And he didn't get him. But he was so hell-bent on getting him that by the time he finally did go get him, he was a shell of himself, and it was a bad move. He did the same thing with, like, guys in the draft that he was enamored with when they were lottery picks. And even if they failed miserably as lottery picks, he had to have them because he had to see if he could change them. That's not what I see with Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio knows, hey, look, there are guys that I want. And if I want to go get him, then I'm going to go get him. But I also know that if I'm going to spend too much, then I'm going to be smart and savvy enough to say maybe another time or maybe not at all.
I disagree with that part. I think he's been – I'm not going to go as far to say careless or reckless, but he's been incredibly aggressive to go get a player that he wants. Many people are criticizing the Stephon Diggs trade after the contract restructure because they're looking at that, oh, you gave up a second-round pick, top 40 pick, for potentially 1 year of Stephon Diggs. The Will Anderson trade. Like,
right,
there's not a draft chart, like draft value chart that exists that shows that the Texans won that trade based on just the pick value, but he really wanted Will Anderson. So I think he throws caution to the wind whenever he really wants a player.
As it relates to guys like Saquon Barkley, I'm going to go get Saquon Barkley. I really want Saquon Barkley, but at a certain point, I'm not going to want Saquon Barkley so desperately that I'm going to do something drastically financially, whether it's right or wrong. That's what I'm referring to. There are times when he might really want to go get a guy, or he really wants a guy, but he's also going to, at least, no matter how much he throws caution to the wind, he's going to be rational enough to say, but at a certain point, no matter how much I want him, for the sake and betterment of my team overall, I'm not going to overextend myself.
Yeah, I mean, I said the money aspect in the opening there, that whenever it comes to the finances is where he'll draw the line in the sand. But I don't want to use reckless, careless as much with the draft capital. It's just super aggressive. He's willing to be more super aggressive with his draft capital than money, because you're right. You do notice him be a little bit more hesitant when it comes to the finances. But when it comes to the future draft capital, he's a lot less hesitant.
Yeah, no, look, and that's why I'm saying credit to him, different than Daryl, because Daryl sometimes also got caught up into every trade deadline, I have to make a trade. Every draft day, I have to have a pick, I have to make a move, I have to do these things. Nick doesn't think along those parameters. I don't think Nick really cares about his reputation. But when Nick, I agree with you that when Nick wants to go get a guy that he really likes and believes in their talent and how they would fit with his club, he should be aggressive enough to go get him, and he should have the ability to be, and the autonomy to be able to do that, along with obviously conversations with D'Amico and whoever, if he has to check with Cal and Hannah. But at least he's not careless, reckless, or so hell-bent that sometimes it's just about the win to get the guy that he has to have on his roster. And he's savvy enough to realize, hey, look, at this point with where my team is, we're going to get to a point where I don't need the kind of draft capital that I've needed the last couple of years. And now it's going to be where I'm going to need specific players that fit a specific need for a team that's really loaded, as opposed to when he was trying to rebuild the whole thing.
I think it depends on how you're acquiring the player, because I agree with you on the finances that he's willing to be, you know, draw the line in the sand. Saquon Barkley, the defensive tackle that left you. When it comes to the draft, I don't think he has that. So it's two different conversations. Financially, I agree with you. Draft capital, I don't agree with you at all. Like, we really want Will Anderson. We're going to do whatever it takes to get Will Anderson. We're going to move, you know, mountain and earth, or whatever that phrase is, to go get Will Anderson. The Stephon Diggs trade isn't as crazy, because it kind of was a tale of two different cities when you acquired Stephon Diggs. When you acquired him, okay, well, he's got 4 years, but there's only guaranteed on the first two, so it's really a two-year deal. But then when you do the restructure, it's like, oh, he can be a free agent at the end of the year. You just used a second rounder for a guy who's going to be here for one season, and that all of a sudden has turned into a bit of criticism. Not so much locally. I've seen a little bit of it locally. I've seen more of it nationally, how the Bills got this great trade because they basically gave away a rental and saved future money, not this year money, but future money for Stephon Diggs. So I think when it comes to trade and when it comes to using his own draft capital, I think that he's you know, willy-nilly, for better or worse. And I think it leads to the question, do you like that Will? Because, I mean, it's clearly a tell. He trades up all the time. Will Anderson's just the biggest of those trades. He trades up all the time. Traded up for Tank Dell. Traded up for Juice Scruggs. Traded up for Nico Collins. Traded up for Garrett Wallow. Traded for Stephon Diggs. So the question now becomes, do you like that you have a general manager that is willing to be, again, not using reckless and careless, because I like the players that they acquired. Are you willing, are you happy that they go caution into the wind, that you have this draft pick? It's not a guarantee, right? You never know how the player is going to turn out. Are you happy that you have a general manager that's willing to do that, to go get something that he really, really wants?
Yeah, I think I am. And I think I am probably because, more so than not lately, he's proven that as a talent evaluator. That, you know, he's had a propensity to, when he drafts certain guys, especially at certain positions, he can find guys that can perform too. So if you know, that's part of why he was hired for the job. If there's guys that he wants to go get and he wants to go get them, I don't think he's mortgaging the farm for years and years to come. And I think that, you know what, maybe we're having this conversation because he has hit on several recently. It's like some of the ones you highlighted, especially with some of the first-round picks. Now, he missed on Kenyon Green, but, you know, he's still on the roster.
That was a trade down, too. You know, that wasn't like an aggro trade to go get a guy.
Yeah, I'm just talking about, like, talent evaluation overall, because otherwise he saw, and DeMeco saw something in Will Anderson that they were willing to pay the price for, and then on top of that, no matter what they gave out, it worked out for them. You know, they got the right quarterback. Whether you say that's because of the Bears or not, they got the right guy, and that guy is paying massive dividends already. And then you look at some of the other guys, when he wants a guy like Nico Collins. At first, people are questioning, why did you do that, and is this guy ever going to be anybody? And then all of a sudden, you pair him with a real quarterback, and boom, you see exactly, hopefully, what Nick Caserio saw. So I believe that it's good to have Nick Caserio doing what he's doing, because I believe in his talent evaluation skills, that if he's targeting these guys, there's a reason. And I believe that reason's going to benefit this team, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I think I'd rather have a general manager, and they're not going to, every trade they make isn't going to work, but I'd rather have a general manager that's aggressive and goes for it than is passive and tempura, where they're like, I'm just going to sit back and let this team be this team. I rather have the guy that's super aggressive, and I also rather have a guy that's super aggressive in this current period of the Houston Texans, namely because you have C.J. Stroud on a rookie contract. So I like the aggression. I'm certainly a guy who looks at the entire roster build. I'm probably more of a forest than a tree guy. But right now, with where this team is at, and because Stroud's on a rookie deal, I like the aggression. Wheezy, I don't think it's smart to trade a second for a year rental. The more I think about this, like, it depends on what side of the spectrum you are. I think this is either a short-term move or it's a long-term move, and it's which of the two would you rather have for this current Houston Texan team. Because the Stephon Diggs trade, if you're acquiring Stephon Diggs, it's because you're looking at the right now. It's for the right now, immediacy, this moment, we're win now. We're going to go out and be aggressive to get a guy. Because when the Texans made the trade with Minnesota to trade down, they slipped to 19 spots. They went from 23 to 42. They gave up 19 spots in the draft. Their reward for doing that was the Minnesota second-round pick in 2025. So now a decision was made when you made the Diggs trade. Okay, what do we find more important, the 2025 Minnesota second-round pick or 1 year of Stephon Diggs? Because I imagine they had a pretty good idea of what they were going to do with the contract restructure whenever they acquired Stephon Diggs. So do we want the long-term play, a next year second-round pick? He could be a player in the future years, when that pick doesn't even materialize until next season? Or do we want out? We want to go and get a potential top 10 receiver right now to add to the trio of Nico and Tank and Schultz with C.J. Stroud? So it was long term versus short term, and Nick Caserio decided the short term was the play.
Look, and that's why you just have to trust him too. Because to your point earlier, look, I can tell you right now, and it's obviously revisionist history, but I can tell you that what you don't want is a guy like Ted Thompson when he was general manager of a Packer team that had two all-world quarterbacks, and he had both of them for those first couple of years before they got into the big money, and he refused to go into free agency. And now when you look back in retrospect and say, for what, 40-plus years of two of the best quarterbacks that you'll see in this league that the franchise will ever see,
yeah,
they had one Super Bowl win, one, and they had two appearances. So you look at that and say, that's almost inexcusable, but that's the hard-headedness of a general manager that maybe doesn't think enough like Nick Caserio, that goes, yeah, maybe in free agency you do end up paying for more than you'd like to, or more than you think the return on investment could be. But it can be the difference between taking your team to another level or being, at the end of the day, having to be complacent, going, we never got where we were supposed to go, and then start going, well, why? And you can look. I think from Nick Caseria's perspective, because of CJ's contract, because whether it factors in or not, you know that people are going to be gunning for you. You know you're going to be able to have a tougher schedule. Why not give this kid every weapon, because he's already proven he knows what to do with them, and give yourself every chance to win every football game because you have seen so much in such a short period of time. As a fan, I think you should love it. When I saw the trade, did I think that might be a little too much for a one-year deal? Sure. But at the same time, to your point, if you can put three of those receivers with that ability out there with a tight end and a running back for him this year and say, we got a legit chance. You're not giving up a top five pick. You're giving up a second round pick no matter how high it is if Minnesota sucks. Yeah. And the return on investment could be extremely high on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's short-term, long-term. It depends on which side you rather be on. And right now, since the Texans, I think, are in Super Bowl contender mode because you have Stroud, especially on that rookie deal, I rather go short-term than long-term. So I'm still cool with the trade, even though it was just a one-year. Now, what I would disagree – I mean, you have the ability to re-sign him. Now, it becomes difficult because if he's bad, you don't want to re-sign him. If he's good, well, you have Nico Collins' expiring contract as well, so that comes into play. The one thing that I would nitpick that you said you have to trust Caserio. No, you don't. You don't have to trust Nick Caserio. You might not agree with anything that Nick Caserio does. You might think Nick Caserio is in over his head. Not that anybody would. You might think that he's incompetent. You might not think he's a good general manager. You don't have to trust Nick Caserio.
No, but what I'm saying is, I don't, whether the fans trust him or not, I think the organization does because of the players that he's brought in and because of how quickly they turned the corner in this year's time. I think that that's why, as an owner, when you hire a general manager, you have to trust him. Now, you've probably set something up to where it's not just him and it's a combination platter with him and D'Amico, and that they're in the room doing these things. But we saw the kind of chemistry they had a year ago, pulling off the moves that they pulled off to do the majority of what caused this team to turn around. So it does. You know, I'm saying from an owner, you bring out a general manager, and a lot of owners, they overstep their bounds. Because they're the owner, they can do whatever they want, and we know the examples, Jerry Jones and others, and Dan Snyder previously, to where you hire a guy, but then you don't fully let him do his job. But if you hired Nick Caserio as a competent general manager, you have to let him do his job. Now you do it with D'Amico in the room, of course. But I think that you're at a point where you trust Nick Caserio to make the right moves for this team.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. We'll carry this conversation over to the other side. Also, how much would you, if you were a professional athlete and you had a number that you loved, how much would you sell your jersey number for? Jimmy Ward got $100,000 from Stephon Diggs for the jersey number one. What's your price? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, another big weekend of sports coming up, and there's more to come as we get closer and closer to some of the big-time golf tournaments and all the other things that are on the horizon with baseball starting. There's only one place that I always tell you to go if you're going to put some money down. It's mybookie.ag, because mybookie.ag is a one-stop shop for all your sports betting and casino needs, complete with a real Vegas experience with live dealers standing by while you stay at your home or on your phone. And now you can take it to yet another level with real-time live betting that lets you stream and bet the games right from the mybookie.ag website. Sign up now. Take advantage of a generous welcome bonus on your first deposit all the way up to $1,000. For example, put $200 in, you get $300 in your account instantly to start playing with as long as you use our promo code BET975. And the fun doesn't stop there. You'll get up-to-the-minute odds, prop bets, and this week's expert predictions if you need help to decide where you want to put your money down. That's all part of being a part of MyBookie. You can't bet on anything, anytime, anywhere unless you join and get in on the site. There's no charge for it. Just sign up. Put some money in. And now MyBookie.ag is your friend. They are going to help you, and you are going to go to them because they take care of you so well. Use that promo code BET975 to secure your welcome bonus. Do what I always tell you to do. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's MyBookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
3878, I take Stephon Diggs for 1 year over 5 years with a John Mechie-type second-round receiver. Okay, let's play the other side of that, though. Would you take 1 year of Stephon Diggs or 4 years of Tank Dell?
Yeah.
So you can go both ways. That's why it's like you don't really know what you don't know. Like, could that second rounder be a Mechie type? Could that second rounder be a Tank type? Tank was actually a third rounder. So it goes both ways. It depends on if you can hit. I think Caserio likes the known commodity of a guy who's been, in this case, in the NFL longer. Last year, the known commodity was more, we feel safer about Will Anderson than we do anybody else in the draft. He and C.J. Stroud. We want C.J. Stroud. We want Will Anderson. We're going to get both at all cost. And I think it worked out.
Yeah, it did. And I think that obviously every year is different. Every draft is different. He's already let us know. Like, he believes that the better, more advanced college players are in big-time conferences. He thinks the SEC is a step above everybody, but he got Nico in the Big Ten. But I think that that's where the talent evaluation comes in, that whether it's a certain skill set and prototype body type that he likes for players, or just his ability to kind of cut through a lot of the BS and figure out this guy can play in the league or not. And I think it also changes from the standpoint of when you're coming from absolutely having basically nothing on your roster, you've got to do a lot more of that, which is a lot harder work because you haven't seen him play on the next level, and there's no way to when you're drafting him. Now he's kind of advanced to saying, now we got a team that looks like we've taken that next two steps to where we might be competing for things way bigger than even just getting in the playoffs or winning a division. Now I need to know what I know and go get those guys that I already have seen. And that's why he went and got a Diggs. That's why when he went on free agency, he was maybe a little bit more aggressive. But that's what you want out of a team that's in go for it. Well, believe me, take it from a guy who didn't have that for a team that he followed for a lot of years. It could be the reason why you don't get as far as everybody says you should year to year. And it could be the difference maker, so you like his aggressiveness.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Cody from New York. You're in the high. What's up, Cody from New York?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How we doing tonight?
What's up, man?
Good.
So we may not. You don't have to necessarily trust Nick Caserio. You got to trust the process. Because the man has shown us a lot so far, and how the hell do we know that he might not be fixing to trade off Stephon Diggs so that we can get Marvin Harrison Jr. to help build for that future.
Okay. All right.
I think that's a little
He did win a lot with C.J. Stroud at Ohio State. How do we know that that's not what he's shooting for? We just got to trust the process.
If he was going to trade for Marvin Harrison, he wouldn't have traded his pick.
No.
Because the pick would have more value than Stephon Diggs on 1 year for a team that's rebuilding, that's that high in the draft. Flip for Stephon Diggs. This isn't a flip. You're not flipping Stephon Diggs. This is not a fixer-upper. Stephon Diggs will be a Houston Texan in 2024.
That's not necessarily true because the amount of cap space we have, we can re-sign him to a decently restructured deal that will make somebody like Arizona who needs
They already did the restructure, Cody. Cody, they did the restructure. All right, Cody, thank you for calling in. We appreciate you listening in all the way from the Big Apple. They've already restructured the deal for Stephon Diggs. If your play was to trade up for Marvin Harrison Jr., you're not trading draft picks for a 31-year-old receiver, going to be 31-year-old receiver, to trade into the top, at worst, seven to a rebuilding team that's going to be looking for youth, not a receiver who's in his 30s. That's the worst call I've ever heard. That's the worst call we've had today.
Yeah. You gave up your first earlier, which would have been a part of a deal that probably would have had to be used to entice a team to give up a draft pick high enough to get a Marvin Harrison Jr. Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous.
And look, here's where I do trust Nick Caserio. I do trust Nick Caserio, but I also think it's fair to have a skepticism of Nick Caserio. I think it's fair to look at this trade and be like, I don't feel really comfortable about trading a future second-round pick for a one-year Stephon Diggs, and then you throw in the final seven games and how he forced his way out of town. Like, there are some cons here. Like, it's a pro-cons list. There are good and there is bad. I'm in favor of the trade because I like the aggression with the quarterback on his rookie deal. I think the Texans are in win-now mode, and I think Stephon Diggs will make the Houston Texans offense a top-five offense in the NFL. So I'm good with the trade. That said, I totally understand the cons, and I totally understand the other side of it, where if you had that second-round pick next year and it's the equivalent of a Tank Dell, then you're losing that trade. You're losing the trade if you get that, a Tank Dell-level player in 2025 for 4 years as opposed to 1 year of Stephon Diggs, which is in play. That is a possibility. Like, that's the con of this trade. The pro of the trade is you get a really good receiver right now for a team who's ready to win and ready to win big.
Yeah, no, look, I think that when you look at the overall big-time scenario, that's why these jobs, anybody could do them, and that's part of the pressure that goes with this. And sometimes you're going to miss a whole lot more than you hit. But the fact is, You also cleared up whether you think it's they did what they did to do him a solid, whether they think you did, they did what they did because they were protecting themselves in case he goes, you know, kind of AWOL or starts ruffling feathers. Or the fact that you know, like you said, you got to pay Nico at the end of the year or let him go. So now, because that contract's not going to be sitting there on the books for another year.
Yeah, but it wasn't a lot. Like, I don't like that argument because it was only $2.5 million. So you save, you protected yourself from a $2.5 million guarantee. Like, that's not enough for me.
No, the
like,
guarantee, but the contract, if you wish to have him back next year, it would have been tough to keep him and keep Nico and keep everybody and keep both of them.
Well, it would have been a lot more affordable to go that route if you wanted a second year of Diggs.
Okay, but I'm just saying overall, the fact is that he's also got – I'm sure he's got second and third plans for everything. Like, I'm sure that he knows, even as he looks at the draft, with everybody saying, well, you could have had a receiver, you could have had this. I'm sure he knows that there are still guys that have played in this league that he really, really likes that are still out there and unsigned that are part of a possibility for him if he needs to go that route. I'm sure he knows there are guys in the draft that if a move – like, even when we saw what was going on with the San Francisco potential trade that fell through and if it was Armstead or not or what he was trying to do, and then watching the two DTs from a year ago just, you know, walk out the door or be pushed out the door, you're like, what's he doing? But I think that's part of why you have to trust him, because there has to be plan B, plan C, and other options for him. That's why he's doing what he's doing. Right now, he's pushed a lot of buttons that have gone the right way with restructures and things to do. The things that he's done to bring in quality veterans and free agents that have already taken you to another level. So, yes, every situation is different to say he missed or hit on this or that. Right now, this offseason, it's hard to say that you shouldn't trust him for all that he's done.
8275 is a franchise tag or transition tag coming to play on Diggs. You can tag him, I was reading, but it's going to cost like $27 million, so I would say it's slim to none. 5798, oof, I'm not surprised a caller named Cody is strolling down Bad Take Boulevard. Fair enough on that point. All right, Todd Callis, voice of the Houston Astros. You can catch him each and every game. Well, not each and every game, but most games on the shin. Todd Callis, TV voice of the Astros, joins us next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Are you tired of repairing potholes? Potholes, it seems like it's just a way of life, right? Like, you can never escape them. They're always in the way. It's always a hassle. You repair them, they're back in a week. Well, stop doing that. Start fixing these potholes for good. Maybe you need a new parking lot. Maybe you need a road out in your, you know, country home, wherever. I don't know where you're needing a road, but maybe you need a road or a laydown yard. Any of these things. Well, Third Rock Renewables' patented technology called mechanical concrete is the only low-cost, industrial-strength, sustainable base which transforms end-of-life tires into a virtually indestructible building product. That's right. These end-of-life tires get turned around to fix these potholes for good. Fix them for good. Do it the right way and never have to worry about these potholes again. Get this mechanical concrete from Third Rock Renewables, which is the only low-cost industrial strength on the market. You know what? You're also going to save money doing it. 75% or more of your maintenance costs can be cut with Third Rock Renewables mechanical concrete. So you're going to be green by saving the life of these end-of-life tires, and you're also going to be green by saving you 75% of your maintenance costs. Call Third Rock Renewables right now, 713-305-0507. Fix those potholes, save lots of money, 713-305-0507, or visit them online, thirdrockrenewables.com. That's thirdrockrenewables.com.
ESPN 97.5.